welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Elizabeth Upton is my guest today, and we'll be back with Elizabeth right after this. So how you doing? Send me an email and let me know. You can always catch me at MathersRodney@yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Elizabeth Upton. She's an author. She's written a book called Exuberant Women Don't Age, No Time to Waste. Is that the correct title?
Yes. Okay. It's the subtitle. Correct.
All right. Well, Elizabeth, we have a little tradition here on the Journey of Hope where we start off asking people to tell us a little bit about themselves. So could you do that for us?
Sure. When I think about talking about myself, I usually go back to things that really have affected my life all through the years. And when I was a young child, my mother remarried, and her husband did not want her children, which was me and my twin sister. So she put us in an orphanage for a few years. And this was a very dramatic experience for me, because I thought we were going to a very elite boarding house. She had told us how excited, wonderful it was going to be. And then it was inferred that we were bad children. That's why we had to be put away in an orphanage. What this experience did to, and this is, you know what, Rodney? Only this past year, after all these years of my life, I've never spoken about it. But I've come to understand how it has affected me emotionally, in my mind, things that I strive for, things that discourage me, how I relate to people. And so at that time, as a little child, I grew into a world of compassion for suffering children, children who had been abused, children who had been discarded, children who were suffering. And through the years, this lived inside my heart. And I feel that's why I eventually, at a very young age, left the Olympic competition as a sprinter to become a nun. And I was a nun for some 20 years. And I worked in areas of ghetto areas, deprived areas, helping suffering families. And as a result of this experience, I decided years later, when I left the nunhood, to not only be to take care of incarcerated people, children, and being a counselor, to write motivational books, not only novels, but motivational books as guides, just so it could relieve people's suffering. There's so much of it in the world. And so the book, Exuberant Women Don't Age, is kind of like, from my own experience, have I mentioned enough about my background?
No, that's great. It gives us a good idea of where it is you're coming from. So you wrote the book, and tell us how you came to write the book and just generally what the book is about.
All right. You know, cosmetics and making oneself look beautiful is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And I've been involved with people, you know, movie stars, people of all ages who've wanted to look better. But even though they've done a lot of plastic surgery, fixing themselves up, they still look bad. And I was wondering, what was that about? And it came to me that they lacked something in their spirit that that didn't radiate happiness. And so the title, Exuberant Women Don't Age, is to break the barrier of superficiality and to get to the real core of how we can become happier, suffer less, worry less, have more peace of mind, feel that we do count, regardless of our circumstances. And it reminded me of the Dalai Lama who said that if you think you're not making a difference, try sleeping with a mosquito. Meaning that sometimes we feel we're too small, that we don't count, and that regardless of our situation, we could have a lot of money or we couldn't have nothing and still feel miserable. So when I wrote this book, I wrote it as a guide, keeping in mind that, hey, we don't have a whole lot of time to read a lot of books, to read hundreds of pages that are easily forgotten. So it was a challenge for me to write a message for us, for all people, that they can move forward with just reading a few words. It could be 10 or 15 words. So it's a condensed format that people can read easily and be able to say, yes, I understand this. Yes, I can move forward. One of the chapters says, I can do it, the state of courage and toughness. And this is how I progress writing this book.
Okay. Now, you talk about doing some exercises and affirmations to help people.
Yes,
along.
You know what? After each chapter, I give it a lot of thought because many books do have affirmations. And you know what? They're very, very powerful. And so at the end of these chapters, I do have about five or six, first of all, questions. One was like, describe a time when you encourage someone to achieve their goals. And what it does is help an individual to draw into themselves and wonder. And then the affirmation, like, for example, I am doing it each day with confidence, strength, gratitude, and optimism. Something they could say over and over.
Yeah.
We have thoughts that drum in our minds all day long. They could be fearful thoughts. They could be worrisome thoughts. They can be even, and they can consume our mind as we go through the day, taking care of our children, taking care of our husband, working a job, no matter what we're doing. And we have to be able to find out how to remove fear and worry so that we can experience peace of mind. And one of the great tools of doing that is so simple. Is thinking of just one little thing to be grateful for. I remember when I was training to be a runner. I was a sprinter, and I was very skinny, and I felt my legs were too... I was bow-legged at the time, and I used to complain endlessly until my mother sat me down and said, listen, look at your legs, feel your legs. And I felt my legs. Are they strong? Yes, they are. Can you run? Yes, I can. Be so grateful, she said. So many people don't have legs, and they can't run.
True. What did you run?
You know what?
What did you run, by
yeah.
the way? What did you run?
Pardon me?
What did you run?
Pardon me? Where did I run?
What did you run? Did you run 100 meters? What did you do?
Oh, I see what you said. I couldn't hear you. I have a muffle in this phone. Yes, 100, 200, 400 meters. And I ran with my twin sister, who always beat me by a nose.
Really?
And it was very exhilarating sports. And it's wonderful today because women excel in soccer. They excel in all sports. And it's a form of exhilaration. When we look at animals, they're little pups. Animals are always playing. And sometimes what happens is that we start to age when we no longer know how to play.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I see that you mention is that you focus on is obtaining forgiveness. That's always a big topic on this show. Tell us,
you know,
tell us your point of view about that and what you know about that.
You know, forgiveness has been a real big thing for me in my life. through, you know, my past, the family, when I came back from living a cloistered social work life, my family did not accept me. So I had a lot of issues with anger, resentment. And one of the things I had to learn, and it was very difficult, was that to accept the fact, forgiveness takes time.
Right.
It's not a Velcro snap situation. It's a process. And you know what, Rodney, until I accepted the fact that it was going to take time, that's when I started the process of forgiveness. I knew I couldn't do it instantly. The very fact that I was making an effort to live with forgiveness, I didn't realize that I was in the state of forgiveness. I had no idea. I was striving, going to conferences, rolling the stones, doing the crystals, blessing myself with the holy water and incense, praying night and day to get over how I felt, never realizing that I was already in forgiveness. And when people understand this lifelong phenomena, it gives them peace of mind. They begin to say, hey, I'm doing my best. I'm moving forward. Even if I feel this, it's okay. It's okay to feel it. I can move on.
Mm-hmm. Interesting that you're already there. But it does take work, doesn't it?
You know what? It's a process, and it takes an effort. You just can't sit on your knee or kneel and say, I forgive so-and-so, da-da-da-da-da. No.
That's
the silliest thing we could do.
That's
we
right.
have to do what we got to do to move forward to it.
And sometimes, Elizabeth, we have to forgive ourselves, don't we?
The big thing. You know, forgiving ourselves for not forgiving ourselves. That's the secret. Forgiving ourselves for not forgiving ourselves.
Interesting.
You know what? I just learned that recently. Yeah.
That's great.
Because then you enter into divine self-love. Begin to love yourself as God loves you. All forgiving. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know what? What is so awesome? You enter another path called the mystical path of compassion. Compassion for yourself, compassion for others. And when I realized that, hey, if I were these individuals, given their circumstances, no doubt I would be doing worse. You see what I mean? So it's also the release of rigid judgment.
Interesting, and that kind of goes into the next thing I wanted to talk to you about is you had mentioned another thing we like to talk about on this show are the things that we perceive in ourselves that can limit us, and you talk about removing limiting thoughts. First of all, Elizabeth, I'd like to know, you know, what is your example of a limiting thought, and then how do you get rid of it?
It reminds me, because I was a counselor, it reminds me of a young woman. Her name was Jezebel, that I was working with. And she was pregnant, and after, you know, several years of marriage, her husband just left her. She had always worked in the home. She was a devoted wife, just left her for another woman. She had no self-confidence. She didn't have the belief in herself that she can move out of her dilemma. She went on welfare. And then, you know, sunk lower and lower in her self-esteem. I can't do it. So when I was working with her, I said, what do you like to do? She says, I like mathematics. I was really good at it in grammar school and high school, even when I dropped out. And I gave her some examples, you know, of physics, mathematics, boom, boom, boom. She got it within seconds. And I said, this is your skill. You could be a CPA. You can get a job and be employed as a bookkeeper. So she started going to night school, taking classes. She aced it all, and as she did better, she was able to have more self-confidence in her ability. Today, she does very well. She's self-employed. She has her own business in a CPA form, and she came from nothing with the lowest self-esteem. And then she became someone because it was a gradual process. She had to do something, though. She had to go to, she chose to go to class, and then she was rewarded with, and found out that she had a talent she didn't know she had at all.
What would you say, though, is, and that's a great story. I like it. And kudos to her. I'm wondering, what are some of the common limiting thoughts that you have found?
You know, mm-hmm. One of the biggest limiting thoughts is it's mind blowing. It's simply this: I can't do it. Think about it.
Right.
Think how powerful that statement is, emotionally in one's mind. I can't do it. It sabotages our movement forward. It sabotages belief in our abilities. It's so crippling. And the other one is comparing ourselves to other people's achievements. Feeling,
yes.
And that's a killer. That's a real killer. It is. And even as writers, this is what writers suffer from. They compare themselves with great writers, and then they get horrific writer's block. You just can't move forward. It's the worst thing to compare yourselves with other people because we are unique in our own right. We have our unique abilities. My twin sister was born dyslexic. She grew up in a time when people didn't understand that was so. She was considered stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So all her life she's had, and then when she was 25 or 6, she opened a book and started to read for the first time. Can you imagine?
Wow.
You know, for the first time, but that lived with her. You know, we were always in the same class in school,
right.
And they would just pass my sister so she could be with me. So that is deep in her consciousness. However, of course, she got married and had children, and I went to college, et cetera, et cetera. But you know who my greatest advisor is and this most astute person?
Who would that be?
In my life, it's my sister. She's brilliant. She can read a line and say, "This is stinks. This is really stupid, Liz."
I've got twin, 4-year-old twin granddaughters. And, and they're great. And I've noticed that, they'll limit themselves. I didn't notice this. I don't remember this when my kids were little, but I see it in my grandchildren. I can't do that. And so you have to teach them that they can do that. But an adult really has to put forth a lot of effort, don't they?
Phenomenal amount of effort. And then with twins, you know, everybody raises their twins differently. And my advice is always dress them differently. Have them in different grades. Have them in different schools. Because twins cling to each other. Sometimes they could build hostility among each other. It's a whole different world to be a twin. Be an identical twin, to be a fraternal twin is entirely different.
Yeah.
But you are right. You know, you are right.
Now, your book is Exuberant Woman, but I got a feeling there's some things some men could glean from this as well.
You know what? It's a book for men. One of the chapters that I started today, okay, I'm looking. It's a great chapter. It's about for the love of men and women. You know, this is a book for men who love women and for women who love men. When a guy puts this book into their sweetheart or the wife's hands, he's saying to them, "I love you."
Mm.
That's how I feel.
Interesting. I like it. Okay. Yeah. The book, how do we get the book, by the way?
By the way, how great you are. All right. You can get the book very easily at any bookstore. They can order it for you. And then you can get the book through Amazon.com. All my books are listed there as well under Elizabeth Upton. Just has to say Exuberant Women Donate and it pops right up. And then, of course, I have, the routine websites, social media, on and on, which is really great. I feel where they can, connect with me with Twitter or Facebook or Google or my regular website. And because today it is social media, so I have a wonderful team called Three Girls, the Three Girls Media, who work with me with the social media. So I'm really blessed to be able to write books. And the reason I do that, I want to be Santa Claus. I've always wanted to be Santa Claus, honest to God, and to give people the gift of peace of mind. Give them little gifts that make them a happier person. That's when I die and I say, hey, I've achieved being Santa Claus, it's going to make me really happy.
Well, I got a feeling that anyone who reads your book and internalizes it is going to benefit from it. Elizabeth Upton, Exuberant Women Don't Age, No Time to Waste. It's been a pleasure chatting with you today, Elizabeth.
It's been exciting for me, thrilling. Thank you so much.
Great. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Keep that email coming. I really like to hear from you. Remember, you can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com, mathersrodney @yahoo.com. I want to thank my special guest today, Elizabeth Upton, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.